water never goes stale. So you gotta just keep on flowing, keep on flowing. So you gotta just keep on, just keep on. Under the sky, under the heaven, there is but one family. Do not believe in styles. Styles separate man. It's a process of continuing growth. Process of continuing. Empty your mind. Be formless, changeless, like water. Water can flow, or it can crash. Empty your mind. Be formless, changeless, like water. My friend.
He uses his grass as a mental crutch. No lecturing, no sermonizing. His senses and time perception are distorted.
Grass crunch. This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, September 9th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Live coverage of Senator Leahy's hearing on marijuana legalization. This from 420 Radio News. Tomorrow, Tuesday, September 10th at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time, the Senate Judiciary Committee, chaired by Senator Pat Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, will hold a hearing entitled Conflicts Between State and Federal Marijuana Laws. Senator Leahy has been calling for a sane approach to marijuana policy and hopes to shed light on the development of state-regulated marijuana markets in Colorado and Washington. 420 Radio will bring you live coverage of the hearing beginning tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. The Russ Belville Show is assembling a panel of experts to provide analysis and live commentary on the testimony presented to the Senate. Scheduled testimony at tomorrow's hearing includes the Honorable James Cole, Deputy Attorney General of the U.S. Department of Justice, Washington, D.C., the Honorable John Urquhart, the Sheriff of King County Sheriff's Office in Seattle, Washington, Jack Finlaw, the Chief Legal Counsel from the Office of the Governor John W. Hickenlooper, Denver, Colorado, and Kevin Sabet, the co-founder and director of Project SAM, director of the Drug Policy Institute at the University of Florida. Questioning the panelists will be members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Leahy's interest in reform is matched by the ranking member, Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, his fervent support of continued marijuana prohibition. No senator from Colorado or Washington sits on this committee. Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, headed the opposition to her state's legalization attempt in 2010. New Jersey Assembly votes on changes to medical marijuana law from ABC.com. The Assembly has approved a major change to New Jersey's fledgling medical marijuana program. Monday's vote will allow dispensaries to grow and sell more than three varieties of pot to patients and provide the drug in an edible form to children. The measure was inspired by families who said their children with severe epilepsy would benefit from using certain types of marijuana. Lawmakers passed a bill in June, but Governor Chris Christie issued a conditional veto last month. Christie said he will approve the bill if it does not eliminate the requirement that at least two doctors sign off before children can have access to medical cannabis. Of the 20 states that have laws allowing medical marijuana, New Jersey is considered to have the strictest regulations. Washington State sets rules for recreational marijuana industry from Al Jazeera America. Washington State regulators aiming to limit the state's nascent marijuana industry want to cap the amount of space available to grow recreational marijuana in the state at 2 million square feet, the equivalent of about 35 NFL football fields. The limit was among proposed state marijuana rules released by the Washington State Liquor Control Board on Wednesday. In addition to limiting the amount of space that can be allocated to growing recreational pot, the new draft rules in Washington State also cap how much non-medical marijuana can be grown statewide at 40 metric tons and would limit recreational use pot growers to a footprint of up to 30,000 square feet per facility. Pot regulations in action. Maine dispensaries fined for using pesticides. This from the San Francisco Gate. In an example of how regulations on cannabis can serve public health and safety, the operator of four of Maine's medical pot dispensaries has stopped using pesticides after a state investigation. The Maine Board of Pesticides Control fined Wellness Connection of Maine $18,000 on September 6th for unlawful use of pesticides on marijuana, reports the Portland Press Herald. The board found nine pesticides at Wellness Connection's growing operations and 20 violations in all between May 2012 and March 2013. Wellness Connection has paid the fine in full and revamped its operations, the group stated. Long lines, but no hassles for free pot giveaway at Denver Civic Center, from the Denver Post. Shouting free the weed, scores of marijuana lovers stood in line Monday for free joints offered by opponents of tax issues on the statewide and Denver ballots in November. Rob Corey, who helped organize the event at Denver's Civic Center, said he supported and helped write the language of Amendment 64, the ballot issue passed last year by Colorado voters that made the possession of an ounce or less of marijuana by people over 21 legal under state law. Corey does not support Proposition AA on this year's ballot that asks voters to approve a 15% tax and initial 10% sales tax on the sales of recreational marijuana. Corey also opposes Denver's tax question that could add a 3.5% sales tax with the option to hike it up to 15%. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, September 9th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we have highlights from the Seattle U.S. Cannabis Cup this weekend, including interviews with Allison Holcomb and Anthony Johnson from New Approach Washington and New Approach Oregon, respectively, Rick Cusick from High Times Magazine, Keith Stropp, the founder of Normal, and Brightside PDX owner-operator Calico Castile. This is the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Tuesday, September 10th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's been an amazing day here on the news front here at the 420 Radio News Desk. We've been here since 11 Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, covering the Senate judiciary hearings on the conflict between state and federal marijuana laws. It was an amazing hearing, some historic moments and amazing words spoken today by the people who testified. We've got the coverage of that. We're going to play it in the next 2 hours, 4 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Pacific. We're going to give you hour two and hour three of our coverage, which comprises most of the testimony, including the sheriff of King County, Washington, who has got a whole bunch of new fans amongst the marijuana reform movement. We've got the chief legal counsel of the state of Colorado governor's office. Jack Finlaw was there. He had some good things to say about Colorado's efforts. The deputy attorney general testified as well. But of course, Kevin Sabet from Project Sam was also among those testifying, or in his case, testifying in front of Congress. So we'll give you those 2 hours right after this hour's show. Plus, at the end, you'll get commentary right after the hearing concludes from High Times Danny Danko and Rick Cusick, who stopped in to join our expert panel of cannabis prohibition activists, acting for an end of cannabis prohibition, who joined us from Iowa, from Colorado, from Arizona, from Missouri, from all over this country, Oregon. It was an amazing time. Georgia. We've got their comments as well as Danny Danko and Rick Cusick. So stick around for that coming up at 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock today. On today's show, we'll just get to our 420 radio news with a little bit of wrap up of this Senate hearing. But then we will also be bringing you in its entirety the marijuana legalization panel from the High Times Cannabis Cup that took place this weekend. On the panel, Allison Holcomb from New Approach Washington, Rick Steves from the I-502 campaign, and of course, PBS and all the Travel Channel stuff. Vivian McPeak was there. Pete Holmes, the Seattle City Attorney, was there. Keith Stropp, the founder of Normal, was there. Lots of wisdom on one stage, and that's coming up right after the news on the Russ Belville Show. So thanks for joining us. Become a supporter. We are listener-supported cannabis community radio. We can't bring you these kind of events like we brought you today without your support. Go to 420radio.org. Become a VIP member today or make a one-time donation or buy something in our shop. We'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
This is a banana. This is a cat. This is fire. This is harmless and actually helpful to some people. Don't believe everything you hear. The fact is that every major health organization rejects smoked marijuana. Now that the smoke is cleared, discover truecompassion.org.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 10th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Senate panel clears the air on marijuana laws from usatoday.com. Federal laws pose significant obstacles to regulation of marijuana in states where it's legal and need to be addressed, said Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, on Tuesday in a first-ever hearing aimed at reconciling rapidly changing state marijuana laws with a federal prohibition on the drug. Quote, "We must have a smarter approach to marijuana policy," Leahy, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, said. "Marijuana use in this country is nothing new, but the way that individual states are dealing with marijuana continues to evolve," end quote. Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, said Colorado has done a poor job so far of preventing marijuana exports to other states where marijuana remains illegal. Quote, "Why has the Justice Department decided to trust Colorado?" Grassley said. "Colorado has become a significant exporter of marijuana," end quote. King County, Washington Sheriff John Urquhart said he sees little conflict between his state's marijuana laws and federal law enforcement. Quote, "What we have in Washington is not the wild, wild west," he said. "The message to my deputies has been very clear. You will enforce our new marijuana laws. You will write someone a ticket for smoking in public. You will enforce age limits. You will put unlicensed stores out of business," end quote. Legalizing marijuana without strict controls will create an enormous public health problem similar to what the United States faced with tobacco use, said Kevin Sabet, founder of Project SAM, which advocates for a marijuana policy that focuses on public health, prevention, and treatment. After years of fighting big tobacco, Sabet said, quote, "We are now on the brink of creating big marijuana," end quote. Pot fans cheer Tuesday's historic Senate hearing from usatoday.com. Dan Riffle, director of federal policies for the nonprofit lobby group Marijuana Policy Project in Washington, D.C., said he hopes for a breakthrough in the hearing that would lead to changes in federal banking laws, allowing marijuana sellers to accept credit cards and checks, not just cash. But, quote, "The elephant in the room is that we have an administration that's essentially working around federal law," end quote, to allow states to legalize marijuana, he said. Quote, "What we should do is just change federal law. Just legalize marijuana," end quote. Planning to be in the front row at Tuesday's hearing is Neil Franklin, who heads Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a nationwide group of mostly retired police, judges, and correction officers who want to see all street drugs legalized. He said, quote, "A nationwide policy of prohibition leads to organized crime, underground crime, mass incarceration, very costly law enforcement, and ironically, the drugs become more widely available and more dangerous because there are no quality control standards. We saw that with alcohol," he said. End quote. Ex-DEA chiefs blast Holder on marijuana stance in Colorado and Washington, from CNN.com. A group of former top counter-narcotics officials are taking on Attorney General Eric Holder over the Justice Department's decision to soften its stance on marijuana legalization. The nine former DEA chiefs, who span the years of the U.S. drug war dating back to the 1970s, aren't moved by changing public opinion on the issue. In the later dated Monday, they said they were, quote, "shocked and dismayed" by Holder's move. Quote, "You took an oath of office, as each of us did, to support and defend the Constitution of the United States," the former DEA officials say. "Great harm will be done in Colorado and Washington and throughout the country with the legalization of marijuana," end quote. The Justice Department did not immediately respond to a request for comment. James Comer, Thomas Massie lobby for hemp in Washington.
this from WFPL.org. Two Kentucky elected officials made the case for industrial hemp Tuesday at a briefing in Washington, D.C. in an effort to lobby Congress to legalize the plant for commercial production. U.S. Representative Thomas Massey and State Agricultural Commissioner James Comer briefed congressional staffers on the benefits of industrial hemp at a forum hosted by Vote Hemp, touting the benefits of research and commercial production of industrial hemp and how it's radically different from its psychoactive cousin marijuana. They were joined by Representative Jared Polis, a Colorado Democrat. Comer argues that because hemp is not defined in the Controlled Substances Act, the Justice Department memo effectively paves the way for hemp's de facto legal cultivation in Kentucky. There are currently two bills circulating in Congress to seek to exempt hemp from the federal definition of marijuana. Comer says that if neither bills pass, he intends to inform the Department of Justice that Kentucky's farmers will go ahead and begin planting the first hemp crops by February 2014. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 10th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Coming up next, in its entirety, we present the High Times Seattle Cannabis Cup panel on legalization in America, featuring Allison Holcomb, Rick Steves, Keith Stropp, and more. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back with that panel next.
I get the names right. We got Kurt Bale, who's an attorney here, longtime activist in Washington State. We have Vivian McPeak, who's the executive director of the Seattle Hemp Fest, a friend of us all. We have Rick Steves, a man who has put a great deal of his time and energy and resources and celebrity at this cause, and it seems to have had results. Allison Holcomb is with the ACLU here, and she too has been absolutely incredible in making sure that marijuana gets legalized. And again, thank you for the results. Okay, and Peter Holmes is the attorney for, city attorney for Seattle. And he has been a long time proponent, but God knows how this wouldn't have gotten moved forward either. Each one of you has had this significant, miraculous accomplishment under your belt. We'd like you to talk about it. I'm going to ask High Times Council to get up and talk first about what the context, given the Department of Justice, has happened in the last 2 weeks. The Department of Justice issued a memo, and we'd like High Times Council David Holland to get up and give us a little bit of context before we ask these people what is the current situation we must deal with.
Thanks very much, Rick, and it's a great honor to be here, and I'd like to thank High Times Magazine not only for putting on the U.S. Cannabis Cup here in Seattle, it's a great event, but I thank them for the privilege to be able to represent them legally, particularly to give a little bit of a background narrative as to the legal scene going on right now. As you all know, that marijuana has been illegal at the federal level for decades and decades, and that happened because under the Nixon administration, it got placed in a Schedule I substance under the Controlled Substances Act. What that means is that the federal government determined through this statute that it had no medical validity whatsoever, there was nothing socially redeeming about it, and therefore it had to be castigated away with things like PCP and other heinous drugs that have wreaked havoc upon society. That designation has not changed since 1970, and here we are sitting in 2013. But of the same token, as all of you know here in Washington and from the other states represented here, there have been 18 states now that have ended up initiating either medical marijuana initiatives through legislative action or through the voters. And then there's also Washington and they've voted for their own legalization efforts, so it's been decriminalized. This has been a fantastic sea change in the world of drug policy in terms of social acceptance, medical validity, and the role that it plays in culture today. The problem that that creates is that the federal law is supposed to always reign supreme against any other law that contradicts it, whether it's at the local level or the state level. So you can see that the federal law that says it's a Schedule I substance and has no redeemable qualities is completely at conflict with the states that are saying it's good, it ought to be allowed on a legal level or a medical level. And so that has created a constitutional issue that Senator Patrick Leahy has recently identified and has called for a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on this coming Tuesday to discuss what's considered supremacy of the federal law and the nullification of it by these different state laws. And so this is a huge constitutional issue that is coming to the forefront. It's something that several people have been arguing for a long time. So with that in mind, that is the context that the Department of Justice, with the second Cole memorandum that just came out, has said that as long as there's a well-regulated scheme in place by the states, the federal government is not going to interfere with states that have allowed either medical or legalized marijuana. That's wonderful, but now you have the executive branch of the government that's required to fulfill its duties in executing the federal laws of the United States, ending up refusing to do that very thing. That's a wonderful thing for all of us who are advocates and believers in marijuana and its use and prevalence in society, but it makes a difficult legal minefield, really, for attorneys and other advocates as to how to advise clients for what the future of the United States is at the individualized level of whether a state can have marijuana or not. And with that, I turn to the experts here in Washington who have really blazed the way here to be able to create the freedoms that you're able to enjoy today. And with that, I'd like to return back to the panel, because that's the conflict and that's the context that this entire conversation has to focus around today as we move forward from here.
Thank you, David. David Hong, the Council of High Times Magazine, giving us a national perspective on the things we have to learn. When people ask me, how does High Times get away with the stuff it gets away with, the answer is really, really, really good lawyers. And our counsel here, out here in Washington this year, Kurt Bale, and he's been involved here as criminal defense attorney since 2005 here in Seattle, and I'd like to hear him talk about what it's like on the ground here and what you've learned now that you're no longer a criminal defense attorney for marijuana.
Hi, everybody. How's it going? I'm really honored to be up here tonight with this panel. You know, Allison Holcomb, Rick Steed, Pete Holmes, Vivian. They've all been, you know, a tremendous asset to moving the legal concept of legalization through Washington. And I really don't think that we would be here to have legal cannabis in Washington without them. You know, my practice started as 100% criminal defense. And I would say around 2007, 2008, I started getting a lot of marijuana cases, medical marijuana cases in King County. And we went to trial on a few, we got some acquittals, the court ordered the return of my client's property, which was his marijuana, and those clients decided to open up shops. They felt emboldened by that, they decided to open up shops. And I began learning 6951A, which was Washington's medical marijuana statute, and advising on essentially regulatory compliance with 6951A, and how to comply with that in kind of a gray area. People opened up shops, nothing happened. Cops didn't come in and kick the door in. More shops opened up. People began to feel more and more comfortable with the idea, with the concept of seeing a dispensary on their street corner. Wow, a dispensary opened up and gangs didn't move in. The cartels didn't move in. There wasn't mass violence in my neighborhood. And I think people began to feel more and more comfortable with that. And then, you know, about 2 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be contacted by Allison Holcomb to basically brainstorm ideas about drafting a legalization initiative. And, you know, at the time, you know, we hoped that it would pass, but we realized the hill that we would be climbing was very large. And I think Allison did a tremendous job in drafting I-502. Obviously, it's not perfect, but I think it got passed. I think it's a step in the right direction, and I think, you know, we're one of the first two states to legalize cannabis because of that bill. And so, so since the passage of I-502, I would say 75% of my work is now regulatory compliance, business consulting, and 25% of my work is criminal defense, which is fine. But I think we have a lot of battles still to fight. And I think one of the things that we're going to see with the passage of I-502 is a lot of people are focused on, like, I need to get a license, I need to get a producer license, I need to get a processor license, I need to get a retailer license. That's all well and good. Once you get your license, you still have to deal with the local jurisdiction where you want to open up. And I think that's where the next battle is going to be. We're already seeing cities issuing moratoriums on recreational shops, and I think that there are going to be legal battles there that need to be fought. I love being part of this work. I love being part of this movement. I feel like I can be, it gives me the opportunity to be something, to be part of something much larger than myself, and that's the legalization of cannabis. As a defense attorney, I've never seen, or I had a client who smoked a joint or taken a bong hit and gone out and intentionally hurt somebody or gotten violent. And I can't tell you how many people have a couple of drinks of alcohol and Dr. Jeffner's talking to Mr. Hyde. We don't know what happens. And in my opinion, cannabis is 100 times safer than alcohol. So again, I'm just honored to be up here, and I'm happy that High Times asked me to be counsel for this event, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I will say this, it's regarded by the rest of us what's happened here in Washington State as miraculous. When we think back and say, how did that happen? How did that happen? Well, the answer has been the ground was made very, very rich by the Seattle Hemp Fest. Without the Seattle Hemp Fest, you would not have legalized marijuana in Washington State. You can bet your ass. And there would not have been a Seattle Hemp Fest without Vivian McPeak. I'll let him speak for himself. Thanks, Rick. You know, been doing this for a couple decades, a little over a couple decades now, and the biggest reward for me personally for the activism and the community organizing and the meetings, and more meetings to talk about how many meetings you're going to have, the reward has been working with such an incredible community of folks and meeting and knowing folks like the amazing risk takers and history makers on this panel here that I'm humbled to be a part of. But just all the people in the cannabis movement, it makes me want to point out that Gene Marlowe just passed away, a tireless Midwest cannabis activist. And it makes me think and reflect on so many folks like Jack Herer and folks that worked so hard and gave so much and never quite made it to see things happening right now and how lucky we are. And I just, you know, a little while ago, I heard talking to some friends, some activists I know from Florida. And they're going, man, my friends would never believe this is happening. And it reminded me that there's so many people that live all over the world that this is an oasis. What we have right here is spectacular. It's so beautiful. And the whole time we've been doing Seattle Hemp Fest, we've known that Hemp Fest is a demonstration in more than one way. It's a demonstration against the laws and against the injustice and the persecution and the scapegoating and you know, an incalculable amount of lives shattered and destroyed and ruined. It's also a demonstration of something really beautiful. HempFest is a demonstration of something just like this event and every other cannabis event that happens, that we can get together as a huge community, we can even be imbibing, and everything's cool, and everything happens, and nothing goes wrong. You know, the same thing's happening in here that would be happening if we weren't baked. And that's the thing about marijuana, you know, you see so many people walking down the street, you go, that guy's drunk. We see some guy in a store and you go, that guy's tweaking on something. How many times you go, that guy's high on marijuana, I can tell. It's that mellow, it's that mild, and that's why they call it the kind bud. You know, I'm humbled to be up here on this panel, particularly considering the controversy and the infighting and the division that took place. Our community, our cannabis reform community, got pretty bruised in the process of getting through I-502 and getting it passed. There was a lot of divisions, there was a lot of name-calling, there was a lot of people willing to be bridge burners. And you know, we're humans, and we do that. I just want to say that the bridge builders realized that there'd be this period post-I-502, and that this community would still be here. And it's so, first of all, it's so great to be on the other end of it, isn't it? But this community is so beautiful, and it's just been great to see the healing take place as we realize that there's no right way to do this. It's never been done before. This is historic. This is trailblazing stuff that's going on, and it's very complicated. It's very sophisticated. There are so many subtle nuances and factors, thousands, millions of factors involved in changing such a fundamental structural policy as prohibition, and so many layers to it, and that the The conditioning's gone on in layers, and the conditioning's going to come off in layers too. And just the fact that this is happening, and there's a street closed off in Fremont, Seattle, Washington, in the United States of America, and people are enjoying themselves and enjoying this new emerging marketplace. It's historic. Just the fact that this is happening at all is just so profound and beautiful. And all the work from so many folks, from the people picking up cigarette butts at Hemp Fest, to the people working with the Liquor Control Board, to the people working with the federal government on every level, from the grassroots to the grass tops. You know, I just want to say that activism is about relationships. And be a bridge builder, man. Whenever you can, build bridges, don't burn them. It feels good to burn bridges. You get a lot of attention. The media loves it. They lap it up. But in the end, it hurts the whole community, because if you build bridges, we can all pass them together.
That is good advice that we're looking for. And if that's going to be one of the greatest problems, the factionalization within this community will continue to be one of the greatest problems as we legalize from state to state to state until we finally get federal legalization, which is the way it's going to happen. Rick Steves. Very hard to introduce Rick Steves because he's so damn well known. But I'm going to read through the CV because it's also very long. He's a professional traveler, author of 30 books on European travel, Europe Through the Back Door. He is the host and producer of Public Television's Rick Steves Europe, host of Public Radio's Travels with Rick Steves. And I'd like to say that tonight he will be honored as a Lifetime Achievement Award, given to Dr. Lester Grinspoon, Lifetime Achievement Award, by Vivian McKee, who was given it last year. Yeah. The honors keep coming in for Rick Steves, because Rick Steves has also been an extraordinarily courageous activist for marijuana law reform. And he has been increasingly active, increasingly visible, until he has had a major role in making sure that marijuana was legalized in his home state. And I'd like to hear what he had to say about that. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Rick Steves.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you very much. It's just a delight to be here. It's just fun to be together with people who care about this issue, because they believe in the civil liberty that the responsible adult use of marijuana is something that we have the right to do. I was just looking at Vivian's notes as he was talking, and there's a pile of scribbled notes there, and Vivian was just talking from his heart. And I've known Vivian for a long time, and I wonder what motivates people to be so dedicated to this cause. And the people I work with are motivated by love. You know, it's a beautiful thing. Love, freedom, civil liberties, tolerance. Now, we're fighting a battle here. And this is a battle that starts in one or two states. Right now there's what I call the lower 48, the others that we got to get on board. But this ripple from what we've accomplished here in Washington State goes all over the world. Countries around this planet can now challenge the United States' insistence on keeping marijuana criminal, because the United States can't really stand strong on their war on pot when two of our own states have now broken away from the federal insistence on locking people up for smoking pot. So, you know, every time I hear anybody talking about this, the idea of a team comes up. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a team. And I was just joking with Keith Stroop, who founded Normal, 30 years ago or something like that. These guys have been at it. Vivian's been at it. Rick's been at it for decades, literally. And then I get to come on board after you guys have softened up the whole situation and hit a home run. Thank you very much. That was great. Now, you know, we had a chance to go around the state and go to the east of the mountains and try to help people not be afraid of I-502. And we had a lot of ways to frame the issue. And it is so fun to appeal to people in a way that's not scary. That you can frame it conservative, you can frame it libertarian, you can frame it progressive. And I got to work with a lot of great people. And I got hugged by a lot of pastors. I got inspired by a lot of legislators. I got educated by a lot of policy wonks. And I got frustrated by a lot of people also, because there is this, as Rick mentioned, stress in our community. We are drug reform activists. We are all on the same team. Nobody needs to agree with us or me across the board. This is a community. We're never going to be all in agreement. But we all have one vision, and that's to let people smoke pot responsibly as adults without getting locked up. You know, that's what we want to do. Now, if people don't agree with me and they're motivated by the same thing, I respect that. But if somebody here disagrees with me and Allison and Pete and everybody else that has worked so hard on this because they're threatened by their bottom line, that they're going to make less money because marijuana is legal, I don't accept that. Now, I'm not bold enough to call anybody out on that, but I think we need to think about that. To me, there's something called the PPP, the Pot Prohibition Profiteers. Anybody here who's profiting on the fact that pot is illegal and they want to keep it that way because they'll make more money is not on our team. All right? You can disagree with us, but we are civil liberties. We want to smoke pot as a civil liberty. And if we legalize this and you lose money, then you're just trying to make money the wrong way because we're not making money off the fact that pot is illegal. If you want to make money, that's fine. I wish it wasn't such a big business thing. To me, I wish it was just homegrown and you just have your own little party. But, you know, the fact is it's going to be big-time business, and that's just the American way. We have opened up an amazing stallion in here, and we're going to ride it, and we need everybody to help us. It is so exciting, and now, a year ago, no politician, except for a lot of courageous Washingtonian politicians would help us out, but, you know, people in Congress and stuff, they wouldn't touch this thing. Now, they're on the team. We're working with them. We are moving it forward. It's a very complicated thing, and it is just exciting to be sitting with people who have so artfully put this together. I always feel humbled when I'm around people like Pete and Allison because they really understand all of the policy dimension to this. All I am is a pathetic celebrity who has the nerve to stand up and say, it's okay to smoke pot. If you know any celebrities that smoke pot and can't say that, give them a call because... It's fun to speak out, and there's certainly nothing in the downside to it, that's for sure. So I guess it's thrilling to be here. I didn't prepare any big statement, but I kind of want to stress that if we want to move this forward, and we do, I got on board on 502 knowing that we had to make compromises in what our ideal might be because we were hell-bent on getting it passed, and we have created a huge accomplishment now, and 48 other states are looking at us and figuring out how they're going to do it too. We did it because we made marijuana not scary. We did it because we preached outside of the choir, and we did it in a way that they said, you know, that makes sense. That's not easy to do. We did it, and because of that, we are now, along with Colorado, the first state that is not just decriminalizing marijuana, but is legalizing it, regulating it, and figuring out that whole complicated backside. The backside that the Dutch have never been able to figure out. They just call it the gray area. They just wait. The Dutch are now flying guys like Pete Holmes over there to give them some advice on how to do this. And I am particularly excited about that. So it's nice to be here, and thank you for coming out to Cannabis Talk.
Thank you, Rick Steve. You know, when you've successfully gone through a war, and you've successfully come through victory, which is where we're heading now. It's no longer a question of will marijuana be legalized, it's a question of when and how marijuana will be legalized. And the few people who have done that, we turn to them now for wisdom, because they've done it. And that's, I don't know, the next two people we're gonna talk to have gotta be the wisest people in Washington State. Because when it comes to opening up the hood of the car and rolling up your sleeves, and actually doing the dirty work of making that engine run, these two people are the ones who did it. Allison Holcomb is the director of the ACLU, Washington's Criminal Justice Project, and she is the primary author of Washington's Initiative 502. She is the one that rolled up her sleeves and put under that hood. Ladies and gentlemen, Allison Holcomb.
Or go ahead and cry if he says, that's fine. Can you do me a favor and raise your hands, please, if you live outside Washington State? That's exciting. That's really exciting. Thank you so much for being here. I mean, there's much I could tell you about the campaign, much I could tell you about the initiative. You may have heard a lot of it or read a lot of it already. So I think what I'd like to do with you because you are the activists that are going to make this happen in other states, is to share with you some of the post-election highlights, so that when you are in the trenches, because you will be in the trenches, and you will have slings and arrows thrown at you, and you will have blood, sweat, and tears all over you by the end of the campaign, you need something to focus on. And there are some amazing things that happen when you make the change that you're about to make in your individual state. I was exhausted after November 6, 2012, and the following days sort of went by in a blur. But about a week or so after the vote, King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg announced, that he was dismissing 175 possession cases, misdemeanor possession cases that were pending in King County, the most liberal county in the state of Washington. And after he did that, other counties followed suit. These were cases where it was still illegal. These were cases where he could have taken them to trial. He could have convicted them. And he decided not to. If you're here from New York, where 50,000 young brown and black men are getting stopped and frisked every year, think how awesome it's going to feel when that ends, when not another person is harassed by a police officer because they are using marijuana or in possession of marijuana. They're not being stopped and being asked to turn out their pockets just in case they've got a gram in there, and then getting hauled off to court and getting the kind of court records and arrest records that change their lives forever. That was the first time that it sunk in what we had done. The second time the power of what we had done hit me when we went to the first forum that our Washington State Liquor Control Board, that's the agency that's making the rulemaking, doing the rulemaking, the first forum that they had in Seattle, there were hundreds and hundreds of people that came to these forums. And this man stood up and he took the mic and he said, "I'm a marijuana grower here in the state of Washington. I've been a marijuana grower in the state of Washington for decades. My family have been marijuana growers in the state of Washington for decades. And I'm here to say that I want to work with you, and I don't want to be left out in the cold. I want to be part of this going forward." And as a person who was a criminal defense attorney for more than a decade, representing mom and pop growers just like him that were getting chewed up in our criminal justice system and saddled with felony convictions every day, to see him take the microphone and talk to state officials, the man, and say, "I am going to walk across the bridge and I'm going to meet you in the middle and I want to work with you to have this implemented in our state," was moving. I just got goosebumps. I thought, this is magical. We're actually going to see this happen. We're actually going to see some real healing between the people who don't trust the state because the state has bad laws in place that they implement against good people. To see him come forward and say, "I'm willing to walk this path with you," was phenomenal. The next thing that happened was July 31st of this year. The House of Delegates of the nation of Uruguay and Latin America stayed and debated in their chamber for hours, all day long, and just before midnight, their time, took a vote to be the first nation in the world to legalize marijuana. And their Senate has, they have more senators willing to pass this measure than the House of Delegates had delegates, and so we're likely to see the first nation in the world legalize marijuana before the end of this year. And what's going on here is a ping pong about U.S. drug policy. It's a ping pong tournament. Washington and Colorado have hit the ball across the border, and other nations can now look at what we've done and say, "Okay, wait, you know how the United States is always telling us that we can't change our marijuana laws without facing economic sanctions, losing significant funding, other kinds of repercussions? How are they going to do that to us now that their own states have said we're opting out of the U.S. marijuana prohibition?" When Uruguay goes, exactly, I mean, please applaud, because it's, we have, Washington and Colorado have defanged the tiger. That is what it's about. And if you didn't believe that, if you were skeptical of that, I believe, and I know lots of lawyers that will talk about the limitations on the memo, but the memo that the U.S. Department of Justice issued on August 29th of this year was Election Day all over again. When we wrote Initiative 502, we wanted to accomplish two things. We wanted it to get passed by the voters of the state of Washington, and we wanted to withstand federal scrutiny, and that is what has happened. The federal government has said, we are going to let you go forward. And that opens the door for everyone else. And what it does too, they have laid out for you the 8 points that you need to keep in mind when you're drafting your initiative or working with your legislators to draft your legislation. It doesn't have to look exactly like 502. 502 is not going to look exactly like 502 in another year or two. Now you have the guidelines that you need from the federal government to know how to move forward. So the last thing I want to ask is, how many people are here from California? Yeah? Okay. Take this back with you. And those of you that know people in California, take this back with you. Believe me when I say this. Washington and Colorado were the game changers. California is the game ender. And it broke my heart to watch the video Legalize It that was produced about the Prop 19 campaign. I mean, it broke my heart, and then it just resonated because it was very much the body blows that happened during the Prop 19 campaign were so similar to what was happening here in Washington. California cannot have that happen. California has to go in 2016, no matter what, no matter what it looks like, no matter how much we like it or don't like it, it has to go. Because Mexico will go when California goes. Woo! And the rest of the nation will go when California goes. And 75,000 people who have died in Mexico for no good reason, we're going to bring an end to that. We're going to bring nationality. Stay tough for your brothers and sisters in California. Help your brothers and sisters in California get it done in 2016, because they've got to. They absolutely have to.
Thank you very much. That is what I was looking for. Thank you very much. When Allison rolled up her sleeves and put her hands under the hood to make that engine run, our next guest handed her the tools. He was an attorney here for 25 years, quarter century, here in Seattle before he was elected in 2009. At that point, there was already a healthy reform movement for marijuana law reform, thanks to the work that Vivian McPeak and the Reform Ministry had done here in Washington State. Allison had put together all of the detailed, dark and dirty work that needed to be done in order to pass it. And then the city attorney came in and was primary sponsor. And that's the reason we have legalized marijuana in Washington State. Ladies and gentlemen,
We do stand on the shoulders not only of the reform community that has been at this insane prohibition policy for decades. And so when I do look to Vivian and to Allison and everyone else, I realize that, you know, I am the newcomer to the party. So it was good to be a wonky lawyer. I love the law. And to be a political newcomer, because it meant that I would look at something in 2009, just go back 4 years. The city of Seattle, that we all know and love, was already had whittled down to two sites where it was going to build its new city jail, and had over $200 million earmarked for that new city jail. We knew that we were applying the prohibition on marijuana in particular disproportionately. It's disparately applied to our African-American communities especially. And so here I was, the new candidate. We had already voted as a city to make it the lowest law enforcement priority, and we had this long debate over the campaign about what does it mean to make it the lowest law enforcement priority. And to me, naively, zero is about as low as you can go. So I can't tell the police who to arrest, but I can certainly say who we're going to prosecute, and that would be nobody. And this was before 502. Surprised at how much of a jaw dropper that was. I went, this doesn't make any sense. Why would we do this? And And so it means that I could sleep well, and it also meant, though, that we could show the world that the world didn't stop spinning, that Seattle did not, you know, go to pot, that Seattle continued to function quite well, thank you. And so then I got to learn more and more about the policy behind it, and that's where I could benefit from the Allison Holcombs of the world and how we had tried to reform medical marijuana, only to have a really good issue, unfortunately, through the then governor's veto pen, kind of messed up what was a really good effort. But I just want to say that I'll close out by saying the prosecutor sitting here is important in whatever state you come from. And you need to start asking the prosecutor, because we do have a time-honored tradition in this country, even for wonky lawyers like me that typically did things non-criminal. We have this prosecutorial discretion, and that's what's happened so far. We're not there yet. We're about the 20-yard line, I like to think, in getting to the end zone. In 2009, there was the famous Ogden memo where the United States Department of Justice said, we're going to allow medical marijuana to go forward, provided they comply with local medical marijuana laws. And in essence, the August 29 memo from Cole, from Deputy Attorney General Cole, is the same thing. They're saying the federal government will not prosecute you in Washington or Colorado, provided you're adhering to state regulations. And there are regulations in both states that are very serious. But it's not a change in the federal law. That's important to remember. It's a prosecutor like the little old city attorney in Seattle saying we're not going to prosecute it anymore. This time it's the big prosecutor saying he's not going to do it in any state that has a medical or a recreational law that is regulating and sticking with those eight issues that Allison mentioned earlier. So the job's not done. This is an incredible freedom that we have won, but it is tenuous. And it is so important that we get on with the rest of 502, that we implement it, that we show we care about our youth, our adolescents having access to marijuana is not good. Any impaired driving that jeopardizes public safety is not good. But by the same token, any leakage that happens or if the black market continues to profiteer while we try to get these 502 stores online, just keep that in mind. You're jeopardizing the ultimate goal. And so I just want to give that one little somber cautionary note that we've got more to do. Watch the Senate Judiciary Committee hearings next Tuesday. Our Sheriff John Urquhart's going to be testifying there. And he's going to be talking about how he wants to enforce 502, that it is legal. It is legal, but it's a new freedom that comes with a responsibility, and that's the point. That's the point. Anytime you see someone saying, though, that 502 is not legalization or whatever, just remind them what it was just 4 years ago, how 60% of the arrests for possession in the city of Seattle were against African Americans, how we were going to build a $200 million jail, how we were going to keep going down that wrong-headed path. And we have abruptly steered away. Just stay with us, folks. Help us to get there all the way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's kind of strange how in 1912, the first anti-marijuana law in this country, a state anti-marijuana law, was passed. 1912. And in the next 25 years, they passed, I don't remember the number, it's like 30 states passed anti-marijuana laws, so many different types of anti-marijuana. They tried to get a uniform state act in 1937, they couldn't get it, so instead they went for the Marijuana Tax Act. And so it took 25 years from 1912 to 1937 for them to nationally outlaw marijuana. And it was a preponderance of state laws that made it happen. I am going to make a prediction that 100 years exactly later, in 2012, the first states legalized marijuana. Over the next several years, maybe not 25 years, maybe another 10 years, we're going to legalize marijuana not only in California, maybe in Oregon, certainly in some places in New England,
And then we're going to see this as a national movement. And then there's going to be places we don't even expect it's going to legalize, and it will legalize. And there will be a preponderance of states, once again, for legalization, and then the government, the federal government, will have to act.